Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
Very good evening, Ben, and hello to everybody.
Hello, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Lots to get through as usual, and as usual, we'll start with what to see in the night sky, as much as we have a night sky at this time of the year, John.
Yeah, that's...
And soon to disappear altogether. Well, practically.
Yeah, just Mercury, unfortunately, hidden deep in the glow of sunrise at the moment. Venus, that was a sight the other night. I was out watching it again, sort of midnight-ish.
Yeah, it doesn't settle around about then.
Even though it's only 50% lit, sort of, or coming up to 50% lit, it's a brilliant evening star in the west from twilight through to late evening, and this month it shines about as high as in the dusk as ever it gets, so it doesn't set until a good 2.5 hours after real darkness. And in a telescope, Venus is a dazzling little gibbous globe, about 62% lit at the moment, and by the middle of May, it will become bigger, dramatically thinning crescent, dropping lower from mid-June through mid-July. So if you look up towards the west, you will get to see Venus shining very, very brightly in the sky. And Mars is crossing Gemini this week, and I did notice that as well. It's just down to the lower left of Castor and Pollux, and it's about 2 fists at arm length above left of Venus, and much closer to Mars's upper right are Pollux and Castor, which are the two bright inline stars. Not unlike, I suppose, Orion's belt, except for the middle one is missing. And Mars has faded to magnitude plus 1.4 between Pollux and Castor. And Mars is the orange one, so you will get to see a little bit of that. And it doesn't really flicker at us, but it sort of just gently glows. Jupiter hides in very low in the sunrise. It'll be on its way up for its 2023-24 apparition. And Saturn is at its low in the southeast before and during early dawn. Uranus and Fortune conjunction behind the sun. And Neptune is out of sight low in the glow of dawn as well. So that's too many to see at all, really. Just Venus is the hidden gem, I suppose, near the feet of Gemini. You get it? And Mars is crossing Gemini just at the moment, so they're not too far apart. Now, just while we have it, the International Space Station is due back in our evening skies on May the 13th until May the 26th. And you can get your clock out. Just a reminder for that, we'll give you the times next week for the International Space Station. We have full moon was on the 5th, Ben, I think. The flower moon as well, and we have the meteor shower as well. So a little bit of confusion of when the peak was of that. It's saying here that the Eta Aquid meteor shower peak was on last Friday the 5th, spoiled by the moon, which was a fine sight as well. The full moon was on Friday, and that's really all about it. Just a reminder that the ISS is back in the evening skies on May the 13th, and it'll be around for a couple of weeks, so it'll be good fun to watch that as well. So we'll give you times of that. And when the new moon, 19th, that's when the new moon is, and we see how quickly we can spot the first little crescent.
After that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. John, speaking of the moon, it is clear this evening, is it not? At least
it's clear. It is clearish, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alan tells us it's clear in Kildare too, which is good. And actually, I had a few aurora alerts over the past couple of nights. I didn't see anything myself. I'm on a WhatsApp group with some people in the IAS. And somebody sent in some fabulous photographs, actually. So if you're maybe looking in, if the further north and the further west you are, I think you'll have a better chance if you can get out from. Well, of course, you need a clear sky, and you need to get away as much as possible from street lights, the light pollution. But there is a half decent chance that you may see some aurora this evening. The moon you mentioned, it's not currently up at the moment from our vantage point here. But it will rise in the early hours of tomorrow morning, or just before 2:30 tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, that is, you will see a 78% waning gibbous moon arise, and it will be due south. If you're up at 5:30 in the morning, it will have decreased just a little bit to 77%. And by the time it sets tomorrow, just before 9:15, it'll have reduced a little bit further to 75%, or 3/4, of course, that is. Now, John, you mentioned the full moon, which is on the 12th, but of course before that, we have to have our third quarter moon, and that will be on Friday the 12th at 3:30 in the afternoon, to be precise. And this one is the closest third quarter moon of the year, and therefore the largest third quarter of the year. Not that you'd really notice, but it will be at a mere 369,850 kilometres from Earth. And, of course, the sun, the days are getting longer, or at least the distances between sunrise and sunset. Actually, tomorrow we'll have more than 15 hours and 35 minutes between sunrise and sunset. When the sun rises at 5:34 a.m. tomorrow morning, that's 13 minutes earlier than a week ago. And the local noon is at 1:21 p.m. and the sun sets at 9:09. And from then until 9:52, we'll have civil twilight. And then we'll have nautical twilight until 10:52. And then we'll have astronomical twilight until, actually, it's after midnight. It'll be in just past midnight tomorrow. It'll be about 30 minutes past midnight tomorrow evening. And those twilights are getting longer now. The astronomical twilight is now 30 minutes later than a week ago. And the nautical twilight's 19 minutes later than a week ago. So that's the longer stretch in the evening. So we'll have 25 minutes more daylight than we had a week ago. Tomorrow another 3 minutes and 30 seconds between sunrise and sunset. And just to recap on some of what you said there earlier, John, today, Tuesday the 9th, Uranus is at solar conjunction. Venus and M25 are in Gemini. You'd see them in the same binocular field of view if you get a good... if you get a clear sky, of course. And on Thursday, if you're a moon watcher, there is a favourable lunar libration. You get a little bit better view of the south polar regions of the moon than normal. It'll be tilted a little bit towards us, more than it usually is. And if you're up early on Saturday the 13th, you'll see Saturn 7 degrees to the upper left of the moon. Now, you mentioned the ISS as well. I know it's back in the evening skies in a week or so, you mentioned, but if you're still up and about just before 2 a.m. tomorrow morning, you'll see it. And again, even if you're still up at just about 3:30, you'll see it pass over again. Again, assuming clear skies.
Yeah, just to go back to the sunstorm that burst out on May the 7th, which was Sunday last at 6:54 in Eastern Time, which was 22:54 GMT, which is nice and bright. The sun is doing strange things at the moment. It's getting very, very active. And seemingly, the May the 7th event has already caused radio blackouts here on Earth. And the outburst over the weekend could lead to more stellar sky watching in some days. So get out there if you can, if it's nice and clear, and see if you can see and report to us, of course, if you see any auroras. Now, they're sort of okay down here, but they are getting stronger and stronger as the sun is coming into its solar maximum. So it's associated with the coronal mass ejection, which is a huge eruption of solar plasma, which is now barreling itself towards our planet. And this is expected to hit Earth tomorrow morning, May the 10th, potentially sparking moderate to strong geomagnetic activity when it does. And it affects space, weather, and all that sort of stuff. So, what's going to happen? It may include supercharged aurora displays, which are great to see. For example, Moderate geomagnetic storms can make auroras visible as far south as New York. Now, we're going the other side because this is where this particular bit of news comes from. But even down as far as the south of Ireland as well.
That's true, yeah. We're further north.
Yeah, we're a little bit further north.
Than New York, so there's a good chance.
Yeah. And we will see severe solar storm sparks around auroras around the world. And these seemingly are the worst solar storms in history at the moment. So it's a good thing if you're a fan, not if you're an astronaut or you've got loads of technology up there that might get blown away with some of the activities as well. So we get huge solar flares and bright bursts of electromagnetic radiation emitted from sunspots. So that's what's happening at the moment. Only going to get worse for a while, another couple of years. Then it'll go back down to solar minimum over the next 5 years after that. So it'll be great fun to watch that. And the auroras are just brilliant to watch as well. So something to look forward to there as well.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and me, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032.
Did want to remind you, just up to May the 19th, you can get to see a few stragglers of the Eta Aquid meteor shower, because you get a sort of a fortnight before and a fortnight afterwards as well. And the moon will be out of the way with the new moon on the 19th. So you've a good chance to see a couple more than you would probably normally expect towards the end of the meteor shower itself. And even though the meteor shower is a few days behind us, having occurred just before daybreak on Saturday into Sunday. And you know, they're always great fun to watch. And if you're lucky enough, as we do when we get out of the car, we're walking down the street, whatever, we always walk or look up.
Look up.
Yeah.
We're always looking up.
Yeah.
In more ways than one.
Hopefully there's nothing there to trip us and we can look down again. So there we go. I'm a great meteor watcher, and lucky enough, we get to see lots of big flares every now and again, which I saw two one night coming home when we were out for a little meeting, you and I. Yep, walking down the dark lane that I'm in, and two of them flared just now. Admittedly, they are about 60 kilometres above our head, but they feel like they're just right next door, dropping in the garden in front of us. Maybe one day.
It will.
Yeah, you like the pot at the end of the rainbow. Yep.
Yes, maybe so. You never know. Mm-hmm. Now, good news for Scotland. I see there's a company called Orbex, and they're a Scottish rocket manufacturer and an orbital launch service company, and they have actually started building the Sutherland Spaceport, which we mentioned here before in northern Scotland. It was formerly known as a space hub, Sutherland, and it's on Scotland's north coast. And that groundbreaking ceremony took place last Thursday, the 5th of May. It's only a 10-acre launch site, which doesn't seem very much for a launch pad, but or a spaceport, but that's where they're starting out anyway. And this spaceport will be the first vertical launch spaceport built on the UK mainland. And they plan to use 62-foot or 19-metre-long two-stage, the rockets are called prime rockets, and the aim is to transport small satellites weighing up to about 180 kilos into low Earth orbit, up to 12 times a year. That's about one launch a month. And it's a reasonably good spot for, I presume they're going to, the plan generally would be to put those satellites in polar orbit as opposed to equatorial orbits. Generally, when you're putting them into equatorial orbits, it's best to be as near to the equator as you can. But if you can be near to the north or the south pole, that's you need a bit less energy to get your spacecraft into space for that. And all good news. They hope to be supporting about 250 new jobs up in the Highlands there. And they are actually, they're saying they're very not quite green or carbon neutral, but they say they're going to use more planet friendly or carbon neutral than current rockets. That they will be the first carbon neutral spaceport, and they're going to be powered by a renewable biofuel which they call Futura liquid gas, which is actually supplied by Calor UK, and they say the rockets will produce 96% lower carbon emissions than comparable space launch systems that use fossil fuels. So everything's looking good. They don't know when the first launch is going to be yet, though, but they have started building the spaceport.
Yep, indeed. Now, just going on to China just for a moment. They're quite quiet or mysterious in the way that they do their bits and pieces around space. Now, launched in, and I'll say this, August the 4th of 2022, and kicking off the mission on its little trip, mission short on details, but long in intrigue. So it's mystifying a lot of people. So the mysterious space plane returned to Earth after a nine-month orbital mission, and it was above for 276 days on its second orbital flight. It's not unlike the space shuttle. A little bit more, I don't know, rough, I suppose. It's not as...
NASA have their own, it looks similar to the NASA one, I believe, which again is like a smaller version of the space shuttle. What do they call theirs? The X-37B or something like that. And it's mostly run, as far as I can make out, by the military. So you don't really hear much about what they're up to or what their main.
Yeah.
It has been, that's been on long flights as well, I think over a year. Not sure about that.
Yeah, evidently, if it's up there for 276 days, there are a few little things to be done or have been done that not a lot of people would know about. I mean, when you think about it, there's been very little coverage of that particular unit from August the 4th last year.
Well, of course, yeah, they are unmanned, but so what can they do that the normal satellite can't do? Well, I suppose some of the, spy satellites, some weather satellites, they're all in relatively high, well, especially the, yeah, they would be in relatively low Earth orbits. Maybe this one comes in lower for a even closer look at things. I don't know. That's just pure speculation. We may never know.
No, I don't think we will. Part of their experimentation, and I don't think it was manned, is it?
No.
Yeah, the big solar panels up, claiming solar energy as well. So we just see what happens over the next week or two, if anything comes from that particular one as well. Now, Virgin Atlantic, it was funny enough, I was watching Sir Richard Branson being interviewed on the TV the other day, and he was just talking about his flight into space on his Virgin Galactic. At the moment, it's just weeks away from the next astronaut test flight, and this eyes spaced tourist flight soon, which they're hoping to get going in June sometime. That'll be very exciting all too. Together now, and the coming test flight is designed to pave the way for the start of the commercial operations next month. So things at last coming to fruition, and it's going to fly into space for the first time in nearly 2 years later this month, if all of course goes to plan. And the company announced yesterday May the 8th that it's targeting late May for Unity 25, its fifth ever space flight and first since July 2021, when, as I mentioned just a few moments ago, Richard Branson went aloft with three other passengers. He had a ball.
Yeah,
in fact, he didn't get out of his seat. He was just looking out the window for ages while the other two are just floating around the place. And then he said, oh, I think before we go back, we better get out and have a little float just to see. So,
it's a 90-minute cruise.
Yeah.
You experience a few minutes of weightlessness in the cabin. Now, this one, this flight you mentioned at the end of the month will have four employees on board, two men and two women. Beth Moses, who has taken part in two previous Virgin Galactic flights, Jamila Gilbert, Chris Huey, and Luke Mars, who actually has spent several years training NASA astronauts. And then the flights that you mentioned next month are the commercial ones, which will have the paying passengers. Actually, the first one will have some people from the Italian Air Force, and apparently they've sold 800 tickets already for their flights, and between the years 2005 and 2014 they sold 800 tickets, which cost between 200 and 250,000 euro, and then since then they've sold another 200 flights at $450,000, I should say. Not that there's that much difference between them,
but no, I don't think so.
Of course they're in competition with Blue Origin. And that's of course what's his name? Jeff Bezos's venture, and he's Yeah, his New Shepard rockets, they've been grounded since September of last year when they had one of them had an accident shortly after liftoff from Texas. And they said that they hope to be resuming flights soon. When soon is, though?
Well, it looks like it's going to be sooner rather than later, hopefully. And what happens is they go to 50,000 feet and then a rocket takes off and goes up to 50 miles, which is just the edge of space, which is about 80 kilometres up in space, somewhere thereabouts. And the views out the window of the bits and pieces that I saw, it's just you see the curvature of the Earth, the thin blue line, everything. It just must be some experience. I was just watching, Ben, as well. There are new photographs, stunning images taken by South Korea's lunar orbiter from their collection. The orbiter's camera has observed details in peaks, valleys, and other striking lunar pictures. And I saw some of these during the week as well. They are breathtaking photographs. It's just a new technology in the way that photographing planets and things like that as well, and sending them back here to Earth. So I'm going to keep an eye on that as well. But some of the craters just in high definition are just absolutely, I won't say astronomical, because that doesn't
thank you, John.
I was asking for that one, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, there's a photograph of
all right.
Absolutely incredible. So you can Google that as well. So just the South Korea's lunar orbiter photos. That's the way you just want to catch that.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And the email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text number is, and the WhatsApp number too, is 087-179-1032. Now, things we mentioned before about 3D printing. And last March, a team launched a 3D printed rocket using a, what they call a innovative NASA alloy. Apparently it's a copper alloy, I should say. And it was the first launch of a test rocket made entirely from 3D printed parts. And it measured 100 foot tall, 7.5 feet wide. And it was a form of additive manufacturing 3D printing. And the whole idea, they reckon, is to enhance capabilities and reduce costs, and it included 9 additively manufactured engines made from an innovative copper alloy, which experienced temperatures approaching about 6,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's a combination of copper, chromium, and niobium, and it's optimized for its high strength, high thermal conductivity, high creep resistance, which allows more stress and strain in high temperature applications, and a good low cycle fatigue, which prevents materials failing. It's like metal fatigue, I suppose. And in this case, it helps prevent this material failing above 900 degrees Fahrenheit. And they tolerate temperatures up to 40% higher than traditional copper alloys, which leads to higher performance, components, and reusability. So technology coming on in leaps and bounds.
Yeah, seemingly the James Webb Telescope, the Space Telescope, has snapped some amazing photographs of an alien asteroid belt. That's worth a little look if you want to go onto Google World.
Oh, I saw the picture.
It's remarkable, absolutely remarkable as well. I think it's Photo Week here in Dublin anyway. So the Artemis 2 are going to use lasers to beam high-definition footage from the moon. Now, I'm just going to follow the path of this. They will be using the geosynchronous satellite, so they're going to use a laser to go from one to the other to the other. And they will use from the ground an optical or radio link to and from the ground, which eliminates any damage that laser beams might cause to anybody back down here on Earth. So they'll travel 40,000 kilometres. They'll reach the low Earth, well, I won't say low Earth orbit, but the geostationary orbit satellites. And they will send a laser beam to the Illumina, this little space station around where the moon is at the moment. So this will be a very, very quick. It'll be like the optical cable, fiber cable type things as well. So it's going to speed up the way that photographs are sent back here to Earth. So there'll be videos galore. So this is brilliant. I'm really looking forward to all this sort of stuff coming up as well. So there we go. Now, the moon's heart of iron has been revealed for the first time. And around 20 years ago, scientists were able to use the rotation of the moon to determine if it had a fluid outer core or not, but the relatively small size of the inner core made it harder to investigate. So they're researching a way. It is solid. That's the thing And they're trying to do a little bit of surveying, I suppose, just to get an idea of how far down the centre is. Well, I suppose they know by the width, the diameter of the moon and all that sort of stuff, and what's exactly in the centre of the moon. But looking at the 3D graphic image shown here, it's like a golf ball. You know the skin around the golf ball? Just a round plastic bit.
Oh.
And then in the middle of that is the dark bit, which is the centre of the core. So I'm going to keep an eye on that because I find it very interesting to see what the moon is actually made of. So it's whether it had a magnetic sort of thing as well at the moment. So we just don't know at the moment, but this is new information coming through to us.
Thank you, John. Very briefly, NASA... scientists have concluded that four of Uranus's largest moons likely contain an ocean layer of water between its core and its icy crust. Now, Uranus has 27 moons that we know of. Most, if not all, are named after female Shakespearean characters Alexander Pope.
We were discussing this, we couldn't figure out, so we're going to look this up as well, just to find out.
Yeah, Ariel, Umbriel, Titania, yeah. Oberon, Miranda, if you're familiar with Shakespeare, especially, what's that? Not much ado then, and it'll come to me now in a moment where those characters are. Of course, there's Juliet as well from Romeo and Juliet, and Midsummer's Night Dream. That's the one I was thinking of. Now, it suggests that the four moons hold oceans that could be miles deep. After scientists previously considered that other moons too small to keep an internal ocean from freezing, with Titania, which is the largest of Uranus's seven moons, the largest of the seven large moons. The most likely to retain the necessary heat. So despite the fact that it's very far away from the sun and rather small, and of course small objects generally tend to lose their heat quicker, that you would, it's a bit surprising, but they think that they have, that these moons could have water in them. And apparently they discovered this after re-examining data originally gathered from the Voyager spacecraft way back from their flybys back in the 1980s, and also using some info, I think, from NASA's Galileo, Cassini, Dawn, and New Horizons missions. So all will be revealed over time, like everything else in the great world of astronomy.
Here we go.
It's a long, long, it runs and runs. It's a long, long story. We still know very little.
Yeah, we certainly do.
Your presenters here know even less.
Yeah,
but anyway.
So we even less about, or if you've been hearing a strange little pinging noise in the background, we have absolutely no idea where it's going.
To track it down.
Ripped the place apart here, so you shouldn't hear it too badly, but it's like a computer ping. We have no idea where it's coming from. So.
We can hear it. Hopefully you can't.
So,
it is annoying, though. Thank you, John, for that. That's all the time we have this evening. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his latest news items, and to James Sweeney for making the show available as a podcast, as the people here in dublincityfm.ie do as well, and to Conor Lennon, who puts it up on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Linnett with Threads. 11 o'clock, Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe, and from midnight to 2 a.m., Dave Barry with his after-hours mix of jazz, blues, and soul. Please join John next week. I am unlikely to be here. I'm away, and I don't think I'll get back in time. That's another story. He'll be here at the same time next week with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.